All right, we'll let the musicians go down at this time, unless they're participating in some special music. While you're turning in your Bibles to the book of Acts, chapter 22. All right, out of respect for the word of God, let's stand together as I begin reading with verse 24. The chief captain commanded him to be brought into the castle and bade that he should be examined by scourging, that he might know wherefore they cried so against him. And as they bound him with thongs, Paul said unto the centurion that stood by, "Is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman and uncondemned?" When the centurion heard that, he went and told the chief captain, saying, "Take heed what thou doest, for this man is a Roman." Then the chief captain came and said unto him, "Tell me, art thou a Roman?" And he said, "Yea." And the chief captain answered, "With a great sum of money obtained I this freedom." And Paul said, "But I was freeborn." Then straightway they departed from him which should have examined him, and the chief captain also was afraid, after he knew that he was a Roman, and because he had bound him.
Thank you, Brother Chandler. I want to speak to you tonight on the blessing of being a freeborn people. Our passage this evening records an interesting conversation during Paul's final visit to Jerusalem. I want to spend a few minutes setting the context of this, which goes over several chapters. But in Acts chapter 21, Paul had returned to Jerusalem bearing a special offering that he had gathered among the Gentile Christians and had brought back as their love gift to the financially suffering saints there in Jerusalem. And Jerusalem was where the first church still existed at that time. It was led by James, whom I believe was the Lord's half-brother and author of the Epistle of James. And this was the church that many years before Paul had persecuted when he was Saul of Tarsus. And so now he is coming back with this great love offering for the poor saints in Jerusalem. And along the way, Paul knew that if he went to Jerusalem, that bonds and imprisonment awaited him. The Holy Spirit had made that perfectly clear, that when he arrived in Jerusalem, he would be bound, he would be imprisoned. But Paul was also clear that he was willing to suffer and die doing the will of God. And if bonds and imprisonment awaited him, he was not afraid, but he would continue on his course and finish what he had started. Now, preachers today will argue about whether Paul should have gone to Jerusalem or should not have gone to Jerusalem. But Paul had no doubts that he should go, and he went with great determination, bulldog determination, and he would not be dissuaded. When he arrived in Jerusalem, he was welcomed by the Jerusalem brethren gladly. But James had a strange request for the Apostle Paul, because everyone was not quite happy to see him. Go back with me to chapter 21 and verse 20. Chapter 21 and verse 20. "And when they heard it, they glorified the Lord and said unto him, Thou seest, brother, how many thousands of Jews there are which believe, and they are all zealous of the law. And they are informed of thee that thou teachest all the Jews which are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, saying that they ought not to circumcise their children, neither to walk after the customs. What is it therefore? The multitude must needs come together, for they will hear that thou art come." And so there were those among the Jews that had heard rumors about Paul and what he was teaching among the Jewish converts in these faraway places, the Gentile converts, and they said, we've got to settle their minds about this. We have to give them some answer. In verse 23, it says, "Do therefore this that we say to thee, we have four men which have a vow on them. Take them and purify thyself with them, and be at charges with them, that they may shave their heads, and all may know that those things whereof they were informed concerning thee are nothing, but that thou thyself also walkest orderly and keepest the law." Now verse 26. "Then Paul took the men, and the next day, purifying himself with them, entered into the temple to signify the accomplishment of the days of purification, until that an offering should be offered for every one of them. Now the great question in my mind is not whether Paul should have gone to Jerusalem, but whether he should have gone into the temple, James's request, and continued carrying out this Old Testament vow of the Nazarite vow and the shaving of the head, and then the presentation of offerings. To me, that's like a Roman Catholic that has been born again and then goes back and takes Mass to appease his family members. There's no reason to go take the Mass. There's no reason to go offer these offerings when we have a once-for-all offering, and that's the Lord Jesus Christ. But that's what Paul did. The Bible never clearly rebukes him. I don't want to rebuke him, but I just have questions about whether he should have done this or not. Whether or not he should have, he did. And that set the stage, because he's in the temple, that some of the Jews from Asia Minor, let's go down to verse number, verse number 27. And when the 7 days were almost ended, the Jews which were of Asia, that's Asia Minor, Turkey, when they saw him in the temple, stirred up all the people and laid hands on him, crying out, "Men of Israel, help! This is the man that teacheth all men everywhere against the people and the law and this place, and further brought Greeks also into the temple, and hath polluted this holy place. And for they had seen before with him in the city Trophimus an Ephesian, whom they supposed," boy, supposing can get folks in a lot of trouble, can't it? "They supposed that Paul had brought into the temple." And so Paul was seen in the temple. Whether he should have done this, I'm not sure. Why the Jewish Christians were so caught up on the law and the temple. In fact, I wonder if Paul did not later write Hebrews as an answer to what he saw in Jerusalem in this journey. Why are you still so stuck on the priesthood and the offerings? Don't you understand what Christ has accomplished? Now, I can't prove that. It's just something a thought that came to my mind. Now, he was seen by these visiting Jews from Asia Minor that hated him. They raised a hysterical mob. You know, we still have hysterical mobs today. They just get all hysterical. They don't even know why. They're just riled up and screaming. And so now the mob is, they're not interested in whether Paul has actually defiled the temple or not. They just have heard that he might have. And so let's raise a mob and let's kill this man. And that's what hysterical mobs do. They overreact. They are not just. It's a sad thing when a nation might be run by hysterical mobs instead of by clear-thinking, cool-headed people. And so now we have this mob. Notice in verse 30. "And all the city was moved, and the people ran together, and they took Paul and drew him out of the temple, and forthwith the doors were shut." Can you imagine the chaos? The temple has been defiled. Get this man out of here. There's no Gentiles anywhere near. Dragging him out. The priests running in. "Let's shut the doors." The doors are slamming shut. And notice it says next in verse 31, "as they went about to kill him." And then it says, "tidings came unto the chief captain of the band that all Jerusalem was in an uproar, who immediately took soldiers and centurions." That means there were at least 200 soldiers, because you have at least two centurions. "And ran down unto them, and when they saw the chief captain and the soldiers, they left beating of Paul." And here's Paul minding his own business, going through the routines of the temple. Next thing he knows, he's being dragged by a hysterical mob, and they're beating him with the intention of beating him to death. In verses 33 through 36, you find the chief captain is carrying Paul safely away. And then we find later on that Paul requested in Greek to the chief captain, "Can I please speak to the people?" And the chief captain was amazed that he spoke Greek, and so he allowed him to address the mob. And so Paul stood out on the steps in chains and addressed the mob and preached to them. And they listened in perfect silence until he got to the word Gentiles. When he said that Christ had sent him to the Gentiles, as soon as they heard the word Gentiles, they went all hysterical again and began screaming and throwing dirt in the air. And so the centurion carried him inside. And notice in verse number 39, this is an interesting biographical statement about Paul. "But Paul said, I am a man which am a Jew of Tarsus, a city in Cilicia, a citizen of no mean city. I beseech thee, suffer me to speak unto the people." That gives us some important biographical information on Paul, that he was from Tarsus, that he was a citizen of that city, And then he spoke to the mob. Now, let's go down to verse number 23. And as they cried out and cast off their clothes and threw dust into the air, the chief captain commanded him, that's Paul, to be brought into the castle and bade that he should be examined by scourging, that he might know wherefore they cried so against him. So the chief captain, he doesn't know what to do about this mob. He doesn't know what this guy has done. But he tells the soldiers, take this little Jew and beat it out of him. Beat him until he tells us what's going on. Now that doesn't seem very just to me. Take this little Jew, and Paul was a little Jew, take this little Jew over there and beat him with a scourge until he tells us everything we need to know. And Paul wasn't having any of that day. Now there were times when Paul felt like taking a beating was necessary for the furtherance of the gospel and for the glory of God. And there were many times Paul took severe beatings. But this day, you know, Paul said, you know what? I'm not taking a beating today. It wouldn't do any good. They'll beat me to death because I have nothing to say that's going to vindicate or explain what's going on. So he says, do you always beat Romans uncondemned? And verse 26 is when the centurion heard that. He went and told the chief captain, saying, take heed what thou doest, for this man is a Roman. Then the chief captain came and said unto him, tell me, art thou a Roman? He said, yea. And my text tonight is verse 28. And the chief captain answered, with a great sum obtained I this freedom. And Paul said, but I was freeborn. In honor of Memorial Day, and I don't always preach a Memorial Day sermon, but I felt led to do so this evening. Allow me to draw some parallels between this Roman captain and the Apostle Paul, one who was born free and one who was born not free and then obtained his freedom with a great sum. I cannot help but be grateful to God for the privilege of being a freeborn American citizen. I appreciate what I have, and I appreciate those who gave it to me, and the people who have preserved it for me, the people that framed our Constitution, the people who paid a price, and were willing to pay a price so that you and I today can be born, freeborn citizens of a great nation. I would not go to a church where the preacher hated America. And I know even some, you know, Independent Baptist covers a lot of territory. And there's a lot of wackos among Independent Baptists because no one will have them, so they're independent. But I know Independent Baptists who seem to hate this country. And I won't fellowship with them. They have gone so far down rabbit holes, they don't know up from down any longer. They're so into conspiracy theories that they can't see clearly any longer. There are preachers who say, you shouldn't have an American flag in your church. Can you imagine Paul flying a Roman flag in the churches of the first century? Because in their minds, they can see no difference between the Roman Empire led by a dictator where Christians were fed to the lions and a democratic republic where citizens can vote in and out their own government and where citizens are protected by law. Is it perfect? No. There's no perfect nation and no perfect government until Jesus rules and reigns on this earth. But to think there's no moral difference between the Roman Empire and the United States of America, to me, is someone who has a moral compass that's not pointing north. I, for one, am proud to be an American. And I'm thankful. To me, patriotism is gratitude. We should be grateful for what we have been given. And it is ingratitude to spit on the American flag, to burn the American flag, to denigrate the American flag because of what it represents. That's all a flag is a representation. It represents something. And to me, it represents something good in this ugly old world. And I think that Christians ought to have a patriotism that is based on gratitude. The scary thing is that there are many people in this country that are in powerful and influential places who hate America, who hate this country. They hate what it stands for. They hate our Constitution. They hate our religious freedom. They hate our right to bear arms. They hate our right to homeschool our kids. They hate our right to knock on their doors. They hate America and they want to fundamentally change it into something else. But what they want will mean an end to the precious freedoms that are the birthright of a freeborn people. And so tonight I want to point out a few thoughts on the blessing of being a free-born people. Notice first, we must appreciate that many are not born free. Many are not born free. This Roman chief captain, he was above the centurions. This man had not been born free. He said, I had to obtain it with a great sum. He had not been born into freedom. The Bible does not say what sum he had to pay. It doesn't say how he achieved that. It doesn't say that if he was a slave that purchased his freedom, which was possible in the Roman Empire. It doesn't say if he was born in a conquered people and then became a citizen, worked his way up through the military and achieved that citizenship and that right to of a Roman citizen. We just are told that he was not free and he had to obtain it with a great price. Folks, there are hundreds of millions of people today that were not born free. 1.5 billion people today in 2019 live under the virtual slavery of communism. You're not born free in a communist nation. In a communist nation, the state owns everything, including you. We need to know these things. The preacher stick to preaching the Bible. Like we can't have anything today. It's all got to be 3,000 years ago. We can't apply anything to today. Folks, we need to be aware that communism is an anti-God government. And the fact that a billion and a half people are under that regime in China and in Southeast Asia and Cuba, it is a terrible blight on humanity. Communism destroys and it strips away freedom until there's nothing left except the freedom of the state over the person. See, our nation was founded on the opposite belief. We were not founded on the belief that we as citizens receive our rights from the government. We were founded on the belief that the government receives its power from us. Government of the people, by the people, for the people. But under communism, and folks, socialism is just half a step away from communism. And 40% of millennials, they're for socialism. It's craziness to me. The state is everything, and that's why conservatives, we fear big government. We want limited government. I don't want no government. But I also don't want a government that controls everything. I want to have the freedom that a limited government protects. Not a state government where I am nothing but a peon and a robot serving the state. 1.5 billion people under communism. 1 billion people living under some form of Sharia law. Islamic law. There's no freedom under Islamic law. It's difficult to know how many people are under the domination of warlords, petty tyrants and dictators, or simply under corrupt governments where there's no freedom, bribery, extortion, wickedness in high places. How many people are born into societies where they're born into a caste and they'll never get out of it? That's not freedom. Where they're dominated by a religion that holds certain people in bondage. It keeps people from going where they want to go, doing what they want to do, being what they can be. Not born free. I can't help but wonder how many young folks are born into these third world environments under communism, under Sharia law, under warlords, in war-torn countries, in deep poverty. And I wonder, they're not any different than us. They have brains like we have brains. They have desires like we have desires. And I wonder how many of them, if they had been born into free countries, might have been great scientists that discovered cures for cancer and many of the diseases we deal with. How many of them might have been the great innovators? How many of them might have changed the world with their ideas? And instead, they're walking behind some donkey somewhere plowing some old dirty field. And they're not ever going to go beyond that. Not because they don't want to or wouldn't if they had the chance, but because they're in some third world under some communist regime or under some dominating government that won't allow them to achieve their potential. You and I have the awesome blessing. And we must appreciate that so many are not born into free countries, born into freedom. And of course, over much of the world, and in all those places I just described, there's no freedom of religion. In communism, you can go to some of the state churches that are there just for show, but those state churches aren't going to preach the gospel. Christians meet in underground churches and cave churches and midnight services. They have to hide their faith in so many of these places. And in some places, you'll not find a Christian because it has been so outlawed for so long that there is no Christian presence. You know what I would like for the world? I wish the world had complete religious freedom. I wouldn't outlaw a single religion if I had the power to do it. What I would want is that every society and culture just had the choice to hear all these religions state their case and each person choose for himself or herself. That's all I would ask for. Let the Muslim preach his message. Let the rabbi preach his message. Let the priest preach his message. Let the Brahma preach his message. And let the gospel preacher preach his message. And let them all preach freely. And let everyone decide where they want to go. And everyone what they want to listen to. And decide what they want to decide. And I think the world would become evangelized in a year. Not everyone would believe, but I think that hundreds of millions would get saved if they simply had the opportunity to hear whatever they wanted to hear and listen to the Word of God being preached. So this chief captain knew what it was like to not be free. That's something probably none of us know what it would feel like. Number two, we need to appreciate the great sum that many had to pay to achieve freedom. The chief captain paid a great price. And I think when he said that, he said it with pride. I think he squared his shoulders back and said, with a great sum, I obtained this freedom. I paid the price so I can become a citizen. We need to appreciate the great sum that many had to pay to achieve and preserve freedom. Memorial Day is a reminder of those who have fought and died in the wars of our nation. I think about the price so many paid and still pay. To me, I can't hardly watch war movies where I see these kids, and even documentaries, I see these kids on D-Day. They're 18 years old, they're 19 year old. They're just a little older than Joe. They're a little older than Michael. Here they are in some transport. They're gonna go to the beach on Normandy, and they're gonna step off the back of a transport and get shot before they even step foot on ground and die in some ocean. And you see these young men, their bodies just left out there on the beach because that's what war does. And the price that was paid, it's awful. It's a terrible price that so many have had to pay. I think about others who paid a price to immigrate legally to this country. My mother's grandparents came here from Italy. All of us have family that came from somewhere. We all know the stories of those who came with just a few dollars in their pockets and they lived in tenements and they worked 7 days a week and so their families would have a better life than they had. So their families will be born in a free country. My heart goes out to those who come here illegally. Now listen, my heart goes out to those who come here illegally. My brain says a nation has to have borders, but my heart goes out to them. I'm not talking about here's the problem. We think they're all coming because they want a better life and they want to pick lettuce and they want to build. Many of them are gang members. They're drug runners. They're gun runners. They are crooks. They're criminals. But my heart goes out to just the person down in Mexico who is born into a country that really is not free. If you're a peon, you're a peon. That's their culture. And they will never rise above that in Mexico. And I don't blame them for wanting to come up here to this country where they can come in and work and make money and provide for their families. My heart goes out to them. If I lived down there, I would want to do that. My head says you can't have that. By the way, we need folks running our country that use their heads and not just their hearts. You can't just have hundreds of thousands of people coming in and burdening the social system and the healthcare system and the tax system and the social. You just can't have that. You can't have the diseases. You can't have unlimited immigration. You've got to have limited immigration. My head knows that, but my heart goes out to them. But one of the most beautiful things in this world is seeing people that have come here legally and they get together in a big group for the swearing in. And they take their pledge and they're announced as American citizens. To me, that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. They've paid a price to become part of this country. And isn't it amazing that you can become an American instantly? No matter what your race, your background, your ethnicity, you're just an American once you're an American. Try that in Germany. You think if you moved to Germany, became an expat to Germany and lived there for 30 years, you think they'd ever stop looking at you as an American? They'll still look at you as a German. Amen. They would. Japan the same way. You're not a German. You're from outside of Germany. But in America, it doesn't matter where you've come from. Once you're a citizen, you're a citizen. You're an American. It's a unique thing here in our country. We need to appreciate the sums that others have paid for us to enjoy freedom and have paid for their own freedom. Number three, we need to appreciate that our forefathers may not have enjoyed the freedom we enjoy. Now, Paul said, I was freeborn. But there was some point when his family was not freeborn. Someone had to pay a price. The Jews have been scattered throughout the Roman Empire, carried by the winds of Gentile conquest. And it wasn't until Julius Caesar that Judaism was given a protected status as an official religion of the Roman Empire, guaranteeing their religion, their freedom to worship. But Jews were not Romans. That's why the centurion was shocked to find out that this Jew was a Roman too, because it was so uncommon. So Paul's father, Paul's grandfather, someone had paid a price for citizenship for his family. Someone had paid a price, and we need to remember that someone has paid our price also. Number four, I want to point out how sad it is that the freeborn man was in chains. The freeborn man was in chains. It's not a perfect interpretation but it is a striking picture of application. That we have here the man who purchased his freedom is free, and the man who was born free is in chains. I want to make this application. It is a shame when people are given so much and do so little with it. To be given so much and to squander it and live foolishly. People born in America sitting in prison. People born in America enslaved to drugs and alcohol. People born in America content to live on welfare and food stamps. People born in America, freeborn citizens, dropping out of high school. Freeborn citizens that can barely even read or write one language, while so many immigrants here can speak two or three fluently, including ours, including English, many who were born here. When I look around sometimes and I see legal immigrants coming to this country, they're here 10 years. They already own a home. They have a business. I mean, they're working hard, putting their kids in school. Their kids are making good grades, and they're getting married, they're staying married, they're raising their families, they're family-oriented. They're living the American dream, they're obeying the laws of the land. And I look around this same country, and I see people that have been here all their life, and they have wasted all their golden opportunities. They've done nothing with the bounty that this land has to offer. They have underachieved, they have been careless, they have been given free school, well, free to them, and free to the homeowners and taxpayers, but they're given free education. They didn't care. They're not going to study. They don't care about school. They have been given opportunities to work in good economies. Doesn't matter. They're not motivated. Y'all with me tonight? They have an opportunity to live in this country and to get a degree, to go to school, get a trade, work a job, buy a house, buy a car, have a family, and where they're sitting in jail because they wouldn't abide by the laws of the land. To me, it's very sad that people are not taking advantage of the blessings that they have in this country. It really isn't rocket science. You finish high school. You don't have kids until you get married. You get married and you stay married. You go to work and show up on time. You do what you're supposed to do. You stay out of trouble. And you have a good life in this country. And you have freedom. And there's no reason for you and I to end up sitting in chains and instead of enjoying the opportunities that we have been given to us, that so many others, that those 18 and 19-year-olds that are dead on Normandy's beach never got to enjoy, and back here we're wasting it, and so many Americans have a victim mentality. They are keeping themselves down because they've been told all their lives that they can't succeed. I wish I could just tell every boy and girl in America, whether they're white or black or Hispanic or Asian,
or a Native American, just tell them that any one of you can be anything you want to be, but don't be a victim. Be an overcomer. You can enjoy the bounties of this land that has been given to us. And there's one final thought I want to bring out tonight, and that is this. Appreciate the opportunities that this freedom gives us to serve God. Now, Paul had been given gifts. He was freeborn. He had received a great education. He was Jewish, and he used his Jewish credentials to get into the synagogues and preach the gospel. He was a Roman citizen, so he could travel the length and breadth of the Roman Empire freely. He did not renounce his citizenship. He used it to serve God and further the gospel. You and I, as American Christians, we have been given so much. I've read so much church history. I'm a little rusty on it, but for quite a long time I taught it in school. And so many Baptists suffered such horrors through the centuries and still served God faithfully and never had the freedom that we have today. Even in America, in the colonies, the Baptist people lost their properties. The preachers were whipped. They were thrown in jail. Patrick Henry rose up in defense of the Baptist preacher. He said, I'm paraphrasing. We have men sitting in jail for preaching the gospel of the Son of God. And even 2 years after the Revolutionary War was over, there were still Baptist preachers sitting in jail for no other offense than preaching the gospel. Just like I'm preaching tonight. Sitting in jail. Having their backs whipped. Having their property confiscated in the Northeast and given to other people and being banished from the colony. That's the sorts of things that happened. That's why they were so adamant about having a First Amendment. And it was the Baptists of Virginia that lobbied Madison and said, we will not ratify. We will not put our votes behind this unless you guarantee an amendment that guarantees our right to peaceably assemble and to worship God as we see fit. Here we have this freedom, and people don't go to church. We have this freedom, and people don't serve God. And there's not even going to be any repercussions for it. And still, people do not do it. We have the freedom today to go to whatever church we want to, or not church if we don't want to. And if someone doesn't want to go to church, I don't believe in forcing them. Except for kids, y'all are stuck. And I don't believe in forcing anyone to go to any particular church. Like I said, I'd like to have every church out there and every religion out there and let people listen to all of them and make their own decisions. That's what I believe is what ought to be done. We have freedom to make visits. And you know who went to court to battle for us to have the right to go door to door? It wasn't Baptists. It was the Jehovah's Witnesses. They're the only ones that cared enough to go to court and battle so we'd have the right to go door knocking, because many Baptists don't want to go house to house visiting any longer. We have the freedom to... This amazes me. I can go buy a bus, get it insured, get a CDL license, or CD licensed driver, and run a bus and bring kids to church. That's amazing. I can go start a church. You know, if I wanted to start a church in some town in America, I wouldn't have to go get a license. I wouldn't have to go get a permit. I wouldn't have to go check in with the city hall and make sure that a church is acceptable to them. I wouldn't have to go get a permit to say, you know what, can I start a church here or not? Do I have to meet before the city council? Because we want to start a church in this town. You know what, all I'd have to do is go find a place to meet at and start knocking doors and start preaching, because this is America and you don't have to have permits to gather together and worship God. Although I wouldn't be surprised if in some places they're cracking down even on that. We have freedom. This freedom is for us to serve God. I can take my kids on a mission trip. I can purchase property and put a church on it. I can read my Bible openly. I can preach the Bible freely. I can homeschool my kids if I choose to. I can start a Christian school if I choose to. So many freedoms we have. But these freedoms are not guaranteed forever. You say, but it's in the Constitution. Yes, and the Constitution could be overthrown. It's not promised us forever. We have to take advantage of the opportunities that are given to us. To whom much is given, much will be required. And the greatest thing about America is not that I can live a middle class life or upper middle class life. The greatest thing to me about America is that I can serve God freely and openly and as much as I want to. And you and I must not take that for granted. Ladies and gentlemen, let us make the most of what has been given to us at great price. That's my message tonight. The blessing of being a freeborn people.